Welcome back to the GCN Racing News Show. Coming up this week, Paul Seixas has reportedly just been offered the biggest contract that cycling has ever seen. I'll be looking at what it means for him and for our sport in general. I'll also be looking at Visma's and Vingegaard's Tour de France team, which lost another important rider last week, and wrapping up as many of the national championships as I can fit in. This week in the world of racing, we learned that Paul Seixas has been offered the biggest salary in cycling history. Dan Benson reported last week that Pinarello Q36.5 are the latest to have put their cards on the table, apparently offering a yearly salary of 13 million euros, which is significantly more than Tadej Pogacar. More on that later on in the show. We also learned that the UCI is going to start using rider power data to try and catch cheats. This was something proposed a few months ago, but a Power Passport pilot programme, hard to say, has now been unveiled. Any unexpected sustained spikes in power will be flagged, triggering extra targeted testing of that specific rider. Apparently, around 60 riders are currently providing their data in order to build the framework for it. Personally, I am a little sceptical on that. I mean, I think it's a great idea in principle, but I do worry about the accuracy and consistency of on-the-bike power meters. And finally, we learned that Jonas Vingegaard may have lost another of his most important Tour de France bodyguards. Wout van Aert has already said that he would not be riding the Tour this year after a wound got infected. And now Edoardo Affini, the Italian, is almost certainly out after a nasty crash at the Italian National Time Trial Championships last week. Now, whilst van Aert is by far the bigger name of the two, Affini is also a Watt monster who would have been extremely valuable, especially over flat and rolling terrain, and especially in the absence of van Aert. Now, I've read some opinions online recently that van Aert will not be missed as much as we might think, people citing a lack of actual meaningful work in support of Vingegaard over the last couple of editions. Personally, though, I would hazard a guess that van Aert has done a lot more to support Vingegaard over the years than what we've seen on television. Beyond his selfless riding, which we do see a lot, I've got to say, simply having a name as big as van Aert on your team takes some of the pressure and attention away from you, and I think that has probably been underestimated over the years. So when Jonas Vingegaard first rode the Tour de France back in 2021, van Aert was already an established name and a champion. And in many respects, Vingegaard's rise to fame and glory started in the shadow of van Aert, and this will be his first time ever at the Tour de France without van Aert by his side. And it's not just van Aert and Affini who are missing from the lineup, but also Christophe Laporte. So the Frenchman joined Jumbo in 2022 and was present in the squad for both of Jonas Vingegaard's overall wins at the race. Last year it was a bit of a write-off for him with illness, and just as he'd gotten back into good form this year, he tore his quad in a training crash. Now, it's not just the power of those riders that Visma Lisebike and Vingegaard are going to miss, but also their experience. Christophe Laporte has ridden the Tour de France 10 times, van Aert 7, and you really can't buy that level of experience. And it counts more in a race like the Tour than many people give credit. They'll also be hugely missed in the opening team time trial. So in our race preview show, I said that Visma will probably start the race as the bookmakers' favourites for the stage, but at this point, I'm not so convinced of that. Affini was an instrumental part of their winning team at the Tour Auvergne-Rhône-Alpes last month and at Paris-Nice last year. So let's take a look then at the experience that Vingegaard does still have by his side for the race this year. Firstly, the Belgian Victor Campenaerts will be riding his fifth Tour de France, but more importantly, this will be his fourth consecutive Grand Tour alongside Jonas. So since joining the team at the start of last year, he immediately became an integral part of Jonas's support. He's done the Tour de France, the Vuelta and the Giro d'Italia with him. So my only concern is that that means he will also be racing his fourth Grand Tour in the space of 13 months. I mean, he's a massive engine, there's no doubt about that, but that is still a lot of racing at the very highest level in quite a short period of time. The American Matteo Jorgensen is crucial too, obviously. This is going to be his fifth Tour de France, and it's not just his power that makes him a brilliant teammate. He's very consistent in every respect of his riding, and he's got a good head on his shoulders. So he's not the type of rider to make stupid or rash decisions on the road. Sepp Kuss has been a key part of all four of Jonas's Grand Tour wins. This will be his 17th Grand Tour and his 6th Tour de France, and we all know just how reliable he is in the high mountains. And then there's Bruno Armouray, the Frenchman new to the team this year, but a man who will be riding his 10th Grand Tour. And along with that experience though, there is also youth in the team. The Norwegian Per Strand Hagenes is a beast of a bike rider, but this will not only be his first Tour de France, but his first Grand Tour ever, full stop. There's no doubt he is physically capable of the task at hand. He's just going to need someone to make sure he's not getting too excited too soon and using energy where he doesn't need to. Now, the other Tour de France debutant on the team is the Italian Davide Piganzoli, one of the revelations of the recent Giro d'Italia. And again, my reservation with him is just how much racing he's already done this year. Not only did he complete the Giro d'Italia, he also raced recently at the Route d'Occitanie. Winning comfortably there was a good sign, but there is a chance he might pay for all of his efforts in the final week of the Tour de France. And finally, it seems like Affini is going to be replaced by Bart Lemmon if the Italian can't take the start. So the Dutchman came to the sport quite late in his career, but he has made some significant improvements in his first few years as a pro rider. He was also at the Giro d'Italia and raced the Tour de Suisse just last week. At that point, though, of course, he wasn't thinking that he would be needed at the Tour de France. So again, I just hope he's got enough reserves to get through in good shape. Now, the reason I'm not personally worried for Jonas is because of Jonas himself. I mean, this amount of chopping and changing of teammates probably would have affected him 5 years ago when he was making his debut at the Tour de France. But since then, he started 8 Grand Tours, he's finished all 8 of them, and never worse than second on the general classification. So, I mean, he kind of knows what he's doing. He knows how to race himself, and he knows what he needs from his teammates. So he will lead that team, and he will give belief to that team as well, especially the debutants. So no, I'm not worried for him or the team, but you may have a different opinion. You can let me know your thoughts on Visma's lineup for the race in the comment section just down below this video. Right, back to Paul Seixas now. Still just 19 years old, he is the most sought-after rider in the pro peloton, possibly ever. And there is a very good reason for that. He's the most talented teenager I think we've ever seen in the sport, and he's shown more than enough to suggest he's got a great shot at being a future great. He turned pro straight out of the junior ranks on a 3-year deal with Decathlon 82R, as they were known at the time, having been with their development team in the years before that. And he was already turning heads last year as a first-year pro, finishing third behind Pogacar and Evenepoel at the European Road Champs, and then going on to a top 10 at Il Lombardia. But it's results and rides this year that have made him the hottest property in cycling. So he was the last rider to stay with Pogacar in both Strade Bianche and Liège. He won the Tour of the Basque Country in a style Pogacar would have been proud of, and La Flèche Wallonne too. So it's no surprise that every team with a big enough budget is scrambling to get his signature on a long-term contract. I mean, we're in a period in the sport where a few big-name riders are winning the vast majority of cycling's biggest races year in, year out. And if you don't have one of those riders, well, your pickings are slim. As such, everybody is not just looking for the next big thing, but afraid they're going to miss out on them. So if Seixas does continue to improve and progress, there is a decent chance he'll be the dominant force in cycling for some time. I mean, there are a lot of ifs and buts and caveats to that statement, but you can absolutely see why such big numbers are being thrown about when it comes to his salary. Is Seixas an investment without risk? Absolutely not. I mean, he'd be a calculated investment, of course, but one that doesn't guarantee a return. Some people say he's already a polished diamond, despite still being a teenager, I guess inferring that there isn't that much room for improvement given how he's lived his athletic life in recent years. And that is in contrast to Pogacar, who won the Tour de France back in 2020 before he'd got everything really dialed in training, racing, diet and equipment, etc. There's also the chance that he has injury setbacks. I mean, this is cycling after all. It's a high-risk sport in which we regularly see horrific crashes. Remember when Egan Bernal was about to win 5 Tours de France in succession? Well, Ineos paid the salary of those expectations since he won the race in 2019. The trouble was, he had an awful crash in training just weeks after that contract was announced, and he's never gotten back to his former level. I mean, it's a testament to Ineos themselves, now net company Ineos of course, that they continue to pay that contract. But it is an example, albeit an extreme one, that an investment can go wrong as well as right. Obviously, teams, though, have to do what they think is best for their future and their plans. So in the case of Pinarello Q36.5, they clearly have lofty ambitions. They paid recently to buy Tom Pidcock out of his Ineos contract to be their team leader, and they do have deep pockets. The owner of the team and Pinarello the company is South African billionaire Ivan Glazenberg. His desire is to have the biggest and best team in pro cycling, and he is clearly prepared to spend the money to achieve that. Now, a bidding war is probably no bad thing for Seixas himself. I mean, he's looking at €1 million landing in his bank account every month from 2028, possibly actually earlier if somebody buys him out of his current contract. However, I say it's probably no bad thing for him, but nobody really knows. Nobody knows how somebody's going to react to being suddenly rich. Not every top sports person retains the same commitment and motivation once they start earning the really big bucks. That's what separates the greats from the good, the desire to continue being the best you can be, even when money is in abundance. The other risk is that somebody else even better comes along in the next couple of years. I mean, the odds of finding the next Tadej Pogačar in the next 50 years are small, very small I would say, but the odds of finding the next big thing are better. Once Pogačar retires, you don't necessarily need somebody that's as good as him, just someone who's the best rider in the sport at that time. And things can change incredibly quickly. I mean, just look at the junior results at the Spanish National Championships last week. So Benjamin Noval, who's the son of former pro Benjamin Noval, was a full 2 kilometres per hour faster than the next best rider in the time trial, and then he won the road race by 4.5 minutes after attacking with 30 kilometres to go. He was already actually signed up to Netcompany Ineos in his first year as a junior, and so he's going to turn pro with them on the 1st of January next year. I mean, again, no guarantees that he's going to be the next big thing, but he is showing promise, and I think that's an understatement. Anyway, I'm going slightly wayward there, but I think you get the gist. It is understandable that every team wants to sign Seixas, and the money being offered is based on his prospects over the next few seasons. The fact that there are a few teams who are willing and able to pay that amount of money only serves to push the price even higher. What Seixas has to decide is what's best for him and his career. Which team is going to give him the best chance of achieving his dream of winning the Tour de France? I mean, that's a tough one to answer, but I guess we'll find out once he's made his decision. Again, let me know your thoughts. Are these sums of money that can ruin a young career, or is it simply an indication that cycling is joining the big money sports? Let me know again in the comments section down below. Right, just before I move on to the national championships, a quick shout out to the GCN shop. With the biggest race in the world starting this coming Saturday, we've got a whole load of special edition merch for sale. That includes a special edition GCN Camelback water bottle, which you can see here, a special print, which I have just down here, and a few special t-shirt designs as well, one of which I'm wearing for the show now. If you scan the QR code that's on screen right now, it will take you through to that part of our online store, or you can simply head to shop.globalcyclingnetwork.com. All purchases go towards funding the free to view videos that we make here at GCN. Speaking of which, if you haven't already watched our Tour de France preview show, it came out last Saturday and goes through all the key stages and all the key riders taking part. Right, I'm going to do my best now to wrap up a huge number of national championship races that took place last week. Not going to be able to cover every single story or every single result, but hopefully I've got the biggest ones. And I'm going to have to start with the Men's Dutch Championships. That was won by Wilco Kelderman. Reason I'm starting with that is that Wilco Kelderman has never crossed the finish line first in all of his 14 and a half years as a pro. He's won a prologue, he's won a couple of individual time trials and a general classification, but never a road race until yesterday. At the Dutch National Championships, he attacked with 27 k's to go and crossed the line over a minute clear of Bauke Mollema. And who says it's all about the youngsters, eh? Lieke Nooyen won the women's race for Visma, outsprinting Femke Markus at the finish. Huub Aerts won the individual time trial in the Netherlands, whilst Aniek Hengeveld led a 1-2-3 for Visma in the women's there. Meanwhile, in Belgium, a three-man break stayed clear to the finish, and it was UAE's Rune Herregaard who was the fastest to the line. He beat Jonas Rickaert and Fabio van den Bosche. Bahrain victorious' Alex Segart won the individual time trial, just 6 seconds in front of Tim Wellens of UAE, although that event had been shortened to one lap instead of two due to extremely high temperatures in Belgium that day. Shari Bassoit won the women's road race, beating Lotte Kopecky in the sprint, whilst Lotte Klaas won the time trial. In France, Romain Grégoire attacked with just over 3 kilometres to go in the championships there and comfortably held on to take his first victory at that event. And it's the first time that he's going to be wearing the French tricolour jersey since winning back-to-back junior titles back in 2020 and 2021. Rémi Cavagnard took a convincing win in the individual time trial, meaning Groupama won both titles on the men's side. Célia Jarry powered clear with 3k to go in the women's to take the elite title at just 20 years of age. In Denmark, Magnus Cort of Uno X won the national title for the very first time in his career. Ironically, just 24 hours earlier, he'd announced that this season will be his last as a pro rider. He narrowly beat Anders Fordinger and Uno X teammate Anton Charmig to the line there, whilst Mats Pedersen of Lidl Trek could only manage fifth in the sprint. There was also a sprint finish in the women's race there, with former world champion Amelie Diederichsen winning the title for the sixth time in her career. Which is impressive, although not quite as impressive as Elisa Longo Borghini, who took her 7th Italian road race title. She's now won it 6 times over the last 7 years, so she pretty much owns that jersey at this point. Lidl Trek's Jonathan Milan won the men's race after a little help from his friends in the finale. He'd never taken a medal before at that race, incidentally, whilst Filippo Ganna won the individual time trial and the women's was postponed. Don't actually know the reasons why just yet. Meanwhile, here in the UK, Fred Wright took his 2nd national title, getting the better of Lewis Askey in the sprint to the line. Those two had been away with Connor Swift of Netcompany Ineos in the finale, with the latter trying to go long but only really serving to lead the others out to the line. Those two titles, incidentally, are Wright's only 2 pro wins. And I really hope he gets one in Europe in the national champs jersey in the next 12 months. Ethan Hayter won the men's individual time trial, but his average speed was not as good as Ben Wiggins in the U23. A slightly unfair comparison, given that the distances were different, but nonetheless, Wiggins' performance to win that was incredible. He was over 2 kilometres per hour quicker than anybody else on the day. A quick shout out to some of the riders who did the double last week, winning both the time trial and road race. Zoe Bagstedt did it in the UK in fine style, Jan Christen in Switzerland, Matthias Vatsek in Czechia, Antonio Morgado in Portugal, Lara Gillespie in Ireland, and Franziska Koch in Germany. There's nothing that shows dominance in your country more than winning both national championships in the same year, so huge congratulations to them. Sticking with Germany, Nils Pollitt won the men's individual time trial there by 2 seconds, despite dropping his chain in the second half of that race and having to put it back on himself. In the men's road race, Felix Engelhardt took his first title, so he'll be wearing the champs jersey at the Tour de France for Jayco Alula. In Spain, Movistar started with 10 riders in the men's race, but the best they could manage was 9th place with Roger Adria. Marcel Camprubi took the win there for Pinarello Q36.5, and that was his first ever pro win. Thankfully for Movistar, they had won the individual time trial of Pablo Castrillo. Mirai Benito was another rider who doubled up, actually, winning the women's road race and time trial for AG Insurance Sudal. No surprise that Uno X won the Norwegian championships. They actually had 14 riders in the top 15 at the race, with Netcompany's Emret Svedstad Barsteng the poor guy in the middle of it all. The win there went to Anders Skarseth, whilst Uno X also dominated the women's race, Sigrid Itterhus Hauset a winner there for them. Primoz Roglic had a successful return to the Slovenian National Championships after a few years' absence. He won the individual time trial by 1.5 minutes, but could only manage 4th in the road race, won by 21-year-old Roman Emekov of Bahrain Victorious. And finally, well done to 20-year-old Seth Dunwood, who won in Ireland, beating 2-time winner Rory Townsend. Townsend himself has been incredibly consistent at that race in recent years. The last time he finished off the podium was back in 2021. Ryan Mullen won the men's individual time trial. Right, that is all for this week. Sorry I couldn't mention all the national championships, but next week is going to be Connor here in the hot seat talking through the first stages of the Tour de France. Almost hard to believe it's starting this coming Saturday, isn't it? I can't wait. Anyway, I will see you again in a couple of weeks' time. Goodbye for now.